Thank you very much. Good afternoon to all of you. I didn't communicate with Mr. Lucenheide before, but he was up here talking about rocks. So I'm going to be talking about rocks. Not really, but kind of. You know, like most people who speak, I think one of the things we struggle with is the subject. What are we going to speak about? What would be good to give to the church that would be helpful and edifying and interesting? Well, I thought I would take advantage of some of the work I do with personal correspondence and answering questions that are written into Cincinnati. And so I'm going to read this question that was written in, and it was sent to me to answer. This fellow said this. He said, back in 1971, they took five lizards and moved them to another island. In just 31 years, the lizards changed in head size and shape, increased bite strength, and the development of new structures in the lizards' digestive tracts, and changes in social behavior also. And then he asked, does this not prove evolution? Sounds like it, doesn't it? And in just 31 years, these lizards changed. Their digestive systems changed somewhat. Their mouths became bigger and stronger. So does that prove evolution? Well, I'm not going to read you my response. It was a page and a half long, so I'm not going to read all that. But basically, I said, no, it doesn't. And the reason it doesn't is because that's simply called adaptation, not evolution. Evolution takes millions and millions and millions of years. And so I told him, I said, if adaptation was evolution, then we could go dig in the dirt and we'd find all kinds of intermediate species, but we don't. We haven't found any. So basically that was my answer. I said, no, it doesn't prove it, just adaptation. And adaptation is well known, and we know how it occurs and so on. So today I want to show you why evolution and the Bible are incompatible. You know, some churches have sort of caved in, and they say, well, maybe evolution is true, and that's the way God worked and so on. But that absolutely is not what the Bible says. Excuse me a second. So I have about 4 points I'd like to give you. Originally I had down five and decided that was a little bit too long. But there probably are hundreds of points why evolution will not fit into the Bible. My first point is evolution absolutely denies the existence of a God. It absolutely denies the existence of a God. Why then can some churches say evolution may be true when it absolutely denies there is a God? They have instead a Big Bang theory. And even though the Big Bang theory is kind of old, that's still the latest and greatest explanation of how we got here. And the Big Bang theory was established, thought up, you know, invented, whatever you'd want to say, back in the early 1900s. And the theory goes like this. There was this mass of rock and dirt and stuff, matter, and it was 12 trillion miles across. Now, you know, you can't conceive of anything 12 trillion miles across, but that's how big this rock was. This big rock. But in 1965, they modified it a little. They said, no, it wasn't 12 trillion miles across. It was only 275 million miles across. But in 1972, they changed it again. And now it's only 71 million miles across. And in 1974, only 2 years later, Now it's 54,000 miles across. That's getting smaller and smaller. Evolution works in the theory, you know, it changes. Then in 1983, they said this mass was no larger than the dot on this page. So it went from, 17 trillion miles across, and now it's that big. And what happened, it's very simple, what happened, it started spinning and spinning and spinning and spinning, and it went faster and faster and faster, and then all of a sudden, boom, it exploded. And as it was spinning and it exploded, it threw out all of these planets out here, and they were spinning too. And that all happened 20 billion years ago, give or take a few years. So what they're saying is that everything you see here, you know, this mic and the flowers and you people here, and that all came from that little speck. That sounds perfectly logical, doesn't it? But it was spinning and spinning and spinning, and there we have all these planets. Do you know we can actually prove that that did not happen? Well, I guess I didn't explain the rest of it. What happened is, after it broke up and all these planets came out here, then it started raining and raining and raining, and it rained for millions and billions and trillions of years, and it developed a soup, and out of this soup came life. You know, that's where it all started. But how about this thing of spinning and spinning? First of all, where did the mass come from? Where did the energy come from? Why did it explode? And, you know, on and on. We could ask all these questions. Who made the laws that makes it spin? And who made the law of centrifugal force throughout these planets and so on and so on? We could ask 10,000 questions. But there is a thing called conservation of angular momentum. What that means is a good way to illustrate, if say you have one of these platforms that they used to have in playgrounds, you put kids on there and you spin it around and around and around and around, and you go real fast and the kids will fly off. And you know what happens when they fly off? They'll spin the same way the merry-go-round. I guarantee it. It happens. That's the conservation of angular momentum. But guess what happened? These planets that you know, from this explosion that went out here, they all spin in the same direction, right? No, they don't. They all spin in one direction, counterclockwise, except Venus and Uranus. They spin the other way. How did that happen? So I guess we have to ask the scientists who thought up this Big Bang Theory, how did that happen? You know what they say? I don't know. And they don't know. And that proves the Big Bang Theory is malarkey, really. Big Bang baloney is what it is. It never happened. What does the Bible say? Well, you know where I'm going to turn, Genesis 1:1. Genesis 1:1 says In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. By the way, in the beginning, it doesn't have to be translated that way. It could be translated in a beginning. That is all translated from one word called bereshit. That one word gets you in the beginning. And what it could be translated in a beginning, because we understand that this is not talking about when God created everything. This is when he reformed and reshaped the earth, because we believe there's a large gap between 1 and 2, because verse 2 says the earth was without form and void and darkness was on the face of the deep. But he didn't create it that way. You know, Isaiah 45, I think it is, verse 18 says he did not create it. Being void and out of shape. He created it perfectly. And then, of course, you understand that there was rebellion of the angels and so forth, Ezekiel 28 and Isaiah 14. I suppose most of you have heard about that. But anyway, this is a recreation. And that's how it was formed. Now, which is harder to believe? The Big Bang Theory with this little dot, smaller than a period, exploded, or that God with an intelligent mind created it? You know, we can look around us and see the amazing things, like the miracles that Bill was talking about. These are amazing things, and they were created. They didn't just happen. Why do people want the Big Bang Theory to work, and why do people believe in evolution? They believe in it for one simple reason, and that reason is in Romans, the first chapter. Let's turn there, and let's break into the thought and begin reading at verse 18. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. And of course, this is talking about a different kind of truth, but they also suppress the truth of how we all got here. They must have an inkling that this theory makes no sense. But they suppress the disproofs of it. Because what may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it to them. There's several ways to understand this, but it's interesting. He said, what may be known of God is manifest in them, in these unbelievers. And it is, because the human body is a marvelous, fantastic thing. You know, I was thinking how wonderful the human mind is. It's so amazing, you can't even describe it. And I was thinking of a simplistic example, and I'll use Mr. Lucenay's baseball analogy. You know, when an outfielder is out in the field, his job is to catch the ball when they hit the ball. And he's out there about 350 feet or so, and he sees the batter swing the bat, and immediately his computer brain says, I know where that ball is going to hit. Approximately. He doesn't know exactly. But he sees the angle that comes off the bat, the height that it comes off the bat, and he sees the sound of it hitting, the bat hitting the ball a little later because the sound travels slower. But he runs to the place he thinks that ball is going to hit, and he makes adjustments. He keeps watching the ball and making adjustments. And if he's a good outfielder, he'll be there. He'll be there when that ball hits, before it hits the ground, and he'll catch it. That's an amazing thing. We take it for granted. Not everybody can do that because it takes some training. But the human mind is like a computer. It's making all of these calculations. You don't realize it, but his mind is making all these calculations, and he's going to be there when that ball comes down. I didn't finish reading Romans. I wanted to read the rest of this. It says, for the since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen. Where are they seen? All around. Just look around. You know, everything. Flowers, everything. Being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead. His eternal power, you know, if it did want to spin something, that would be God's power, but of course it didn't happen that way. Because although they knew God, they did not glorify him as God, nor were they thankful, but became foolish, futile in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened. And so these men who profess to be brilliant are actually foolish. And was it Psalm 14:1 says, only a fool has said in his heart, there is no God. Only an absolute fool would say that. But of course, these people who teach evolution, and they teach it in the schools even to this day, don't believe that. You know what they think? They think you and I are fools. That's what they think. Let me read something that was written by a famous evolutionist called Julian Huxley, and he was the brother of Aldous Huxley, and he's a leading proponent of evolution. And he said this: the sense of spiritual relief which comes from rejecting the idea of a God as a superhuman being is enormous. He says the relief of getting rid of God, as what he said, is enormous. He said, I'm so relieved that there's not a God. In effect, that's what he's saying. How ridiculous is that? So that's the reason they believe evolution, is because they do not want to deal with a living God that has rules and regulations. They do not want that. And that's why they have endorsed this foolish theory of evolution. Point number two is evolution is based on assumptions, circular reasoning, and deception. All three. There's something they call the geological column. Does anybody know what the geological column is? Not very many of you. The geological column is the layers of earth that they say have been deposited through these billions and billions of years. And they have different strata, and they have names for them. They call the Cretaceous, the Jurassic. You must have seen the movie. That was from the Jurassic era. And the Triassic, and so on and so on and so on. They have all these different ages. Well, let me tell you a true story about that. And now, this thing was invented in 1830. And to this day, they still use what this gentleman thought up. He just thought it up. All this strata and all these ages. He dated them and everything. He knew all of that stuff. Now, one time a family was visiting a museum, and they had along with them a 12-year-old girl. And one of the first things they looked at was the geological column that was in this glass cage, because they don't want you to mess with that thing. It's kind of sacred, you know. And the guide said, see this strata right here? That's 70 million years old. And the little girl said, Mister, how do you know it's 70 million years old? He said, oh, that's simple. He said, it's from the bones and the fossils we find there. You see, we can date those bones and fossils, and we know it's 70 million years old. Well, I guess the little girl was satisfied, so they went somewhere else, and they looked at the bones, dinosaur bones. Or some kind of bones. I don't know if it was a dinosaur. And he said, see these bones? They're 120 million years old. And the little girl raised her hand. She said, Mister, how do you know they're 120 million years old? He says, we know because we found them in the strata that's 120 billion years old. And she said, Mister, isn't that circular reasoning? He said, first you told me the strata was that old, and now you say the bones are that old by the strata. That seems like circular reasoning. And he said, oh, I never thought of that. That's supposedly a true story. I never thought of that before. Of course, we know that geological column is baloney, because they found in the strata that's supposed to be 350 million years old, they found this fish. And the fish is called coelacanth fish. And they said, that fish is 350 million years old. But in 1938, they caught one. It caught a 350 million old fish. Well, of course, they were wrong. It was a modern fish. It wasn't 350 million years old because they dated it by the strata, which is unreliable. Here's what one of these learned men said. And actually, it was the same person that conducted the lizard experiment that the fellow wrote in about. He said this: "It is absolutely safe to say that if you meet somebody who claims to not believe in evolution, that person is ignorant, stupid, or insane." Ignorant, stupid, or insane. So I guess we know what he thinks of us. But the Bible, of course, says it's the other way around. Now, there's another thing they use called comparative embryology. That, too, was invented in the 1800s by a fellow by the name of Haeckel. And he had all these drawings of embryos. And he said, see, they all look alike. All embryos look alike. What does that mean? They all came from the common thing, from the soup. They all came from this soup. Well, since then, they found out that he was faking. He doctored up the... First of all, he chose only the embryos that did look similar. He cast out the others, and then he doctored them up, and he drew little things that looked like gills on these fetuses, embryos. And so that, too, is fake. And to this day, I understand those drawings are in textbooks in schools and in high schools and colleges. Let me read you something that was written by an evolutionist. This guy is an evolutionist. His name is Stephen Jay Gould. He wrote this: "Even Haeckel's contemporaries criticize him for these misrepresentations, which, among other things, include doctoring drawings to make them more alike than they really are, and choosing only those embryos and life stages that came closest to fitting the theory. Likewise, he claimed, or this Gould claimed, that Haeckel exaggerated the similarities by idealization and omissions, and concluded that they were characterized by inaccuracies and outright falsehoods." So this is a guy that believes in evolution, but he admits that these drawings are just, you know, so much bunk. They're not true. They're phonies. And again, those drawings are in books even to this day. The third point I'd like to bring out: evolution violates common sense and the known laws of physics. You know, even a child would have trouble, I would think, swallowing evolution because it's so bizarre. For example, at a lecture one time on a debate on evolution and creation, and this one evolutionist asked the creationist, he said, "Are you telling me that you think all the dogs in the world, and there's millions of them, millions of varieties, all those dogs came from the two dogs that was on Noah's Ark?" And he kind of grinned. And of course the evolutionist says, yeah, we believe that. And the creationist says, "It's better than believing they all came from a little rock about that big." He said, "It makes more sense to me that they came from other dogs, not from a rock that was spinning. And it rained and rained and soup developed." You know, we have a law that life comes from life. It doesn't come from rocks or dirt. Life comes from life. That's a law that cannot be violated. Have you ever seen a dog that meows, or a cat that barks, or have you ever seen a half cat and a half dog? No, you never have. And you never will. Just the scripture that Bill read, 1 Corinthians 15, verse 39, says there are different types of flesh. And the types of flesh of animals are different from others, and so on. Now, evolutionists would have you to believe that, you know, they concocted this theory years ago, and that actually Darwin read in his book, he said, all of this thing will be proven as time goes by. He said, we'll find all of these things, and it will prove what I'm telling you, that, you know, life evolved. But we haven't found any. Let me read you an excerpt from a book called Evolution, A Theory in Crisis. It was written in 1985. That's about 20-some years ago. So it's a little outdated, and but what it says is true. It said, almost 88% of the varieties of mammals, reptiles, and amphibians populating the Earth have been found in the fossil record. How many transitional forms, then, have been found? Although each of these classes, and he names them again, is well represented in the fossil record, as of yet, no one has discovered a fossil creature that is indisputably transitional between one species and another. Not a single undisputed missing link has been found in all the exposed rock of the Earth. And they've pretty much, you know, they've been digging for hundreds of years. And they never found one intermediate species. Not one. Not even one. And that's why adaptation does not answer the question, because adaptation takes place rapidly. Evolution takes millions and millions of years, according to the theory. And if it happened rapidly, then we would see that in our lifetime. We would see a species go into another, and we don't. So the truth is, there's not one shred of real evidence in the fossil record for evolution. And they base all of their theories on guesswork, and there's no proof of it. There's just no proof of it at all. My fourth point, and beginning to finish here, all the mysteries of life that the evolutionists don't understand are in the Bible. You know, it's a simple book, but all of their questions can be answered from this book. Let's turn to Hebrews. Hebrews 11 and verse 3. It says, by faith we understand that the worlds were framed by the word of God. The word framed there could be created by the word of God, so that the things which are seen were not made of things which are visible. And that's a miracle. God created them from things that are not visible, things that he created himself. And yes, it's based on faith. It says, by faith, we understand the world were framed. Evolution is a faith. The thing is, it's a faith in a concocted theory. And it's a faith driven by wanting to get rid of God. Let's turn to Colossians, the first chapter. Colossians, the first chapter, and read a couple of verses, verse 16 through 17. By him all things were created that are in heaven, that are in earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or principalities or powers. All things were created through him and for him, and he is before all things, and in him all things consist. What I would like to point out here is that it says, in him all things consist. You know, God actually still drives the universe and the physical creation. Scientists, you know, every atom has a nucleus, and around the nucleus revolves a number of electrons. If there are 10 electrons, the nucleus has 10 positive, I don't know what they call them, elements. But the problem is scientists don't know how these 10 charges stick together. Positive charges repel each other. The same with negative charges. They repel each other. So how does that nucleus stay together? Well, Colossians 1:17 says, in him all things consist. Jesus Christ himself actually causes things to continue to work. Let's turn to Revelation, the fourth chapter. And we're going to read just one verse here, verse 11. Actually, this is a verse that I meant to go into that analogy because this one states it more clearly. It says, "You are worthy, O Lord," Revelation 4, verse 11, "O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power, for you created all things, and by your will they exist and were created." That's the verse that that really says that God, by his will, the universe exists. He continues to make the universe work. In Isaiah 45, and I just want to read one verse here. "I have made the earth and created man in it," verse 12, Isaiah 45, verse 12. "It was I, my hand, that stretched out the heavens and all their hosts I have commanded." So how did these planets get out there? God said he put them out there. And he spun two of them backwards just to make fun of the evolutionists, I think. I'm guessing there. But there must be a reason why these two planets spin backwards, just to dumbfound the brilliant men of this world, I guess. So why do people believe in evolution? As I said before, they believe in evolution because they do not want to believe in an all-powerful God that has rules and regulations and gives us the blueprint of life. They don't want to adhere to the laws and precepts of God. Evolution is an unproven theory. It demeans God's creation. It's a hoax, actually. It's a hoax. Those who believe in the true God cannot accept the theory of evolution.